Okay, dokes, ready?
Let's do it.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Anti-Shuffle Podcast, your local source for news in the alternative and metal scene. We also cover international news and happenings as well. I'm your host, Abdallah Mozesh, and with me as well is Mansoor.
Hello, everyone. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you all.
We got a good one today.
Yeah, today we're going to talk a little bit about a couple of bands that we've been listening to. There's a lot of like throwbacks. A lot of things that we've been, that it's been a while since I've listened to. So it's nice to go back and listen to those old records. But yeah, there's some really interesting highlights as well. And, you know, we're going to be talking about the dying art of recording live instruments at the end of the episode. So stick around for that. But without any further ado, let's get right into the... All right. So I found this interesting. I don't know if you're familiar with this band, Mansoor. I'm sure you are. Like, I'm pretty sure you know them
very
well. And how do you say their name? I've always said their name, Kailasa. I don't know if this is right.
Yeah, I think that's the way to pronounce it.
Yeah, so Kailasa, they're like a sludge metal, you know, they're in that genre, sludge metal, like very slow, very heavy sounding kind of metal. In any case, they went on break for a while, and I was just surprised to see that they're back, they're touring again. So, you know, I just thought that was interesting because it made me want to go back and listen to their older records. I remember their records when it came out, I really enjoyed them. Interesting choices as well of the people that they're touring with. Chad Pyle, which is like a noise punk rock, like not punk, but see, noise metal, maybe like punk, you can say. Kind of outfit. Their vocals are very spoken wordish, kind of very poetic kind of sounding noise rock. And Alten Gun, which is like a very, I don't know if you've, have you heard of this band, the psychedelic, like kind of Middle Eastern, you know, Turkish, I think, sounding band based out of Europe.
No, but, I haven't.
But it's really cool. It's really cool seeing these guys tour again. Hopefully they'll release a new record as well. That'd be nice.
Yeah. I mean, kind of enjoyed one of their earlier albums. To be honest, I haven't listened to many of their albums. Just for the one, I forgot what it's called, to be honest. My memory is a bit shot. But yeah. It's good to see them back. I kind of expected them. I wasn't surprised to see them back, to be honest.
Yeah, but it's been a while since they went on hiatus. خلاص, at some point, I was like, oh, okay, خلاص, these guys like are not going to be getting back together. And is there like a market really for a band like this? I mean, yeah, I guess there's always like a market for these bands. Like they've had a big following. It's not like they're, you know, they're like a scene darling, you know, at the end of the day. So yeah, for sure. It's one of those bands that it's good to see that they're coming back together. And other interesting kind of throw, I can't believe I'm saying this, but it's been 15 years since Crack the Sky came out. Mastodon Crack the Sky.
Making me feel old, man.
God, yeah, but yeah, first of all, it's one of the best records of all time. I don't know. I remember, like, I put them in my top five. Remember the episode we did where, like, the top five bands of all time? I think I definitely put Mastodon in there. Did you? Is it one of the bands that you put on your top five as well, or no?
I don't think so, but I do love Mastodon. But I think the last couple of albums, like the last two or three albums, for me, just
Pretty weak.
I just didn't like them. But this is an absolute classic from start to finish. Crack the Sky. It's just beautiful. It's a beautiful album.
Yeah, I mean, definitely, like, you know, like everything after Crack the Sky, honestly, has not captured me. It's like you said, like, but Crack the Sky and the albums before it, those are like instant classics. Those are all like very unique and interesting sounding. Blood Mountain, obviously. I mean, Leviathan is like an amazing, like, record from front to back. It's just amazing. Anyways, they're releasing like this 15th anniversary kind of special edition of Crack the Sky with a bunch of stuff. I'm really interested in getting this, the record itself, just the LP. But unfortunately, the website does not deliver to Saudi. So I don't know. I'll have to see if I can figure out another way. But yeah, it's really cool.
I don't know if the special edition has like so many.
I don't need it. Like, it has like a poster. Yeah, honestly, the artwork, I don't like. I really don't like this artwork. This artwork for me is like OP. Like, it's the best, one of the best artwork ever. And this, I don't know what's going on here, but maybe this poster is cool. It comes with a CD. It comes with like the LPs. It comes with Madrid, the instrumental CD. And it comes with a lot of things that I don't really want. If I already had this, maybe this would have been interesting. But then $100, yani shwaya. And it's not cheap.
Yeah, I mean, are you really, really going to use a CD? You know what I mean?
Exactly. This is, for me, collector item. It's the LP. It sounds great. Whatever. Yeah, خلاص, this is enough for me.
It's a nice color. It's blue for all our listeners. It's a nice blue vinyl.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, yeah. But then I showed you غيره في artwork, you know, the itself. Like, it's a bit different, but it's like the same amazing artwork that they've had. Mastodon's one of those bands that really do well with artwork, honestly. Like, their albums, even the ones that we don't like so much, they have amazing, amazing artwork, and they're really good at creating like concept kind of albums as well.
Yeah, they're good with the visuals for sure. I mean, and Crack the Sky is an amazing album. It's very sad once you get into the subject matter, but it's, yeah, the visuals are fantastic, the lyrics, the music, everything.
It's their first album that maybe they started going towards more of a prog rock kind of sound. And that's, after that, it's been like they've been really going down that hole and getting more, let's say, more accessible, more rock kind of sounding. But like Crack the Sky was a perfect blend of like progressive rock and metal, you know, like it was, it was really well done with the same like twangy kind of sludgy sounding feel that Mastodon always brings. Long songs, long concepts, big story there to tell. So yeah, really cool. Anyways, definitely worth checking out Mastodon if you haven't done so already. Leviathan is my favorite album for them, but Crack the Sky definitely is like an amazing, amazing, amazing record to listen to. That's it for the news. Yeah, let's get into the music, man. We have a bunch of stuff to talk about. All right, man. Go ahead, man. Why don't you tell me what you have been listening to recently?
So it's kind of short and sweet. So the first album is Resin. I think that's how you pronounce the band's name.
I love that band.
Yeah, they're really good. I mean, they released an album this year. It's called Burden.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's a pretty solid album. Actually, it's a very good album.
Super good. So sounds great as well.
Sounds great. I mean, it's very, I'd say, kind of in the doom metal territory. It's very slow, very heavy. It's also quite dark and depressing. Yeah, I mean, it's a continuation of their previous album. Which was released last year.
Yeah.
It's just that, you know, it's a very heavy listen, and I don't mean sonically, just emotionally as well. I mean, it's only
the singing is very emotional. The singing is very like emotional.
Very emotional indeed, and I think the singing like balances out like the gloominess and all the darkness stuff.
Yes.
And it's 35 minutes in length, but it feels very dense. Like it's one of those albums where you have to be in the mood to really listen to it. Kind of like it's like listening to Neurosis and those kind of bands where it's not an easy listen. But
yeah,
it's a very good album. It's if you're into that kind of, if you're in that sort of headspace, it's just the perfect album to listen to.
One of the few bands that have like synth elements and keyboard elements that I enjoy.
It's
so good. It's so well done and they do it so well. And like you said, it's heavy, But like the voice, the vocals, like sonically, like kind of like play off of the heaviness in a way that makes it sound really cool and nice. And I saw those, I saw that band live as well. And one of the best sounding bands I've seen live. I don't know if it was the venue, because they opened for Russian Circles, and even Russian Circles sound amazing. Sounded amazing on that in that performance. But man, great sounding band. And they had like a saxophone player also on stage with them. It was just a great show. They sound amazing. Really cool band.
Yeah.
Really worth checking out.
That there's a sax solo on the song Soft Bray, which is very, very like, it just caught me off guard a bit, but I really like that. Yeah. So do check it out. It's a fantastic album. And the previous one, Solace, that's a very good one as well.
Yeah.
The next album is The Melvins, their album Tarantula Heart. This is, The Melvins have been around for like 40 years or so.
A million years.
And they have so many albums. And this is like their 30th album or something. I would say it's a typical Melvins album, even though The Melvins always try to do something new. But this is the first like Melvins album in a while where they used two drummers. The drummer here is
what do you mean used two drummers? Like in Noyani, there's two drums playing at the same time. No, I didn't catch that. Oh really?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
There are two drums playing at the same time in this record?
Exactly. And
I didn't catch that.
They for a while they had two drummers as well. It was the, I don't know if you have you heard of Big Business?
Yes.
So it was the duo, basically. They joined The Melvins and they had two drummers, and the bass player was the singer for Big Business. He was the bassist for The Melvins. And then they left the band, and now this album, they have a guest drummer. You can say it's Roy Mayorga from, what's it, band Stone Sour.
Ah,
Stone Sour. Yeah, he's the drummer on this album. So this is, I'd say, kind of a typical Melvins album. The first song is 20 minutes long, and it's just the Melvins have this thing where they can write like straightforward like rock songs, and they also experiment with a lot of noise and things like that.
Sludge.
It's very.
Funnily enough, the Mastodon lists the Melvins as a huge influence on them.
I think the Melvins influenced like a whole genre of bands, like from the post-metal scene. Everybody cites the Melvins as an influence. Mm. So it's a good album. There's one song that's kind of annoying, to be honest. It's called Allergic to Food. Like, it has this really annoying guitar part, but the rest of the album is fun to listen to. And
I tried to get into the Melvins. Is there an album that you would recommend I listen to? Like, because I honestly tried to. Because Mastodon, they a lot of bands say that there are huge influences on them, but I just couldn't. Is there a particular album that you think people should listen to if are you even like, are you like a big fan of Melvins? Would you be able to make a recommendation like that?
I'm a fan of the Melvins. I wouldn't say I'm a big fan because I'm still like discovering their discography, but Houdini is a great album. Bullhead, Senile Animal, those are a few others, especially the ones with the Big Business guys.
Yeah.
Senile Animals, one of them. Those are definitely good albums to start with. There's one called Basses Loaded, and had like a lot of guest bass players on it. That's a good one. So do check them out. My last album here is from Extinction AD to the Detested. This band is interesting. They're kind of a 90s, you can say, influenced band. 90s groove thrash kind of metal band.
Yeah.
They're very much heavily influenced by like Pantera, Machine Head, and Sepultura.
Lean towards hardcore. Yeah, they lean towards hardcore and metal, like thrash metal.
That's true.
Yeah.
A lot of hardcore influence as well. Overall, this album is good. It's not wow.
It's
a good listen in terms of just like if you want something that's straightforward, riff heavy, don't want to think too much. But I mean, it has it has a tendency to sound monotonous.
Yeah, but again, it's a hardcore vocals with like, you know, hardcore influenced riffs and stuff. This gonna end up sounding monotonous a little bit sometimes.
Yeah, but there are some pretty good moments. Like there's a song with Matt Heafy from Trivium. Mm. He guests on a song, which I felt like was one of the highlights of the album. There's a kind of a tribal metal song there, which hence the Sepultura influence. It's called Burnt Sienna. I think that kind of breaks the monotony a bit.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
again, if you're into that kind of thing, you might enjoy this album. It's good, but I wouldn't say it's great.
Second band on this list that I've seen live. I've seen them open for the Hope Conspiracy. or Hope Conspiracy. So again, it was like a hardcore show, and yeah, they opened. Ombra Vitae was also playing that show. That's, you know, definitely they fit into that hardcore crowd. Very tough guys, tough guys, like music, you know, like all, they're all like muscular and like bandanas, and yeah, it's really cool. No, it's okay. It's not my favorite, like, record or anything like that. I'd rather listen to other kind of hardcore and stuff like that. But yeah, it's pretty cool. It's not bad.
Yeah.
Anything else?
I think that's it. What are your selections?
So I've been like weirdly. So I've been going like back into for some reason I started listening to Pigs, whatever that band's name. Because I got one of their older records. And it sounded completely different to what they sound today. So I decided to just like go through their discography again and just listen to it. And yeah, it's one of those bands that went from being like a very sludgy, slow kind of rock kind of outfit sounding, band into more upbeat, but still sludgy and retaining that sludgy kind of metal kind of or rock, yeah, sludge rock kind of sound. And I think their second to last album is my favorite album, definitely. I forgot the name. It's called Viscera, something like that. I forgot the name of the album, but I think is my favorite record of theirs. Definitely worth listening to if you're into that kind of sludge kind of sound.
That's a good band. It kind of had, I got some Motorhead vibes, especially like, because I'm familiar with the latter day stuff.
Yeah. But it's less like thrashy. Not less as thrashy, yeah.
As like that kind of, let's bring back that rock and roll vibe, but without sounding too retro. And
exactly. Yeah. It's more sludgy, definitely like on the, you know, that kind of side of the sound, the spectrum.
Yeah.
Definitely right. Yeah, they're really cool, and there's like a bunch of live videos of them on YouTube. That's really fun. It's really cool. And then like I'm still on that like modern death metal kind of sprint where I'm just like been going through like different. So I discovered recently a band called Ripped to Shreds, and they're American. They're an American band, but I think the band members are from of Chinese origin. They're you know, because there's a lot of like Mandarin, like a lot of the song names are in Mandarin and stuff like that. So and the artwork is very like influenced by, I guess, Mandarin kind of folklore and Chinese folklore and stuff like that. So but really heavy, really cool sounding band. Mm. They have a record that's going to come out soon, and they released a couple of singles. If you want to listen to some really cool modern death metal, definitely go check them out. And since I saw like a lot of Mandarin, like, you know, writing, I ended up like going down this path of listening to other Asian death metal, like hardcore and death metal bands. So like Cruelty came up, and like I started listening to them, and they're really good, heavy Japanese hardcore band. Definitely would recommend checking them out. Pretty aggressive sounding. Like Japan has some pretty aggressive punk and hardcore and death metal scene. Even like their pop metal stuff, like you listen to it and you're like, how is this pop? You know, like there's too much stuff going on there. How is this popular? You know? But yeah. And then I don't know what it is, but the Kailissa artwork, because we like, again, I saw that they're reunited and I started listening to them. And then, but their artwork reminded me of remember that band? There's this Norwegian band called, I don't even know, I'm not sure if I'm saying their name right, but they're called Kveldertak or something like that.
Kveldertak, that's how I pronounce it.
Kveldertak, okay.
I hope that's right.
Yeah, I mean, that band, I think they released their first two albums like 10 years ago, 15 years, 10 to 12 years ago, I think. Those two first records are excellent. Like, they are some of the best rock, heavy rock. Like, they're so super, like, obviously, they're, you just mentioned, like, bringing back that old rock and roll sound and everything. Mm-hmm. That's them, right? They're doing it, but a bit heavier and with, like, more aggressive, shouty kind of vocals. And even they do is a bit of, like, you know, there are some parts where they go, like, skank beat a little bit, tuk, 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 and they do, like, death metal, like, sorry, black metal vocals, which is kind of weird. But then they go back into, like, you know, rock and roll sounding riffs and that are just aggressive and heavy enough that it doesn't feel cheesy or arbitrary, you know?
Yeah, it has cool, like, that kind of AC/DC type of riffage.
Sometimes,
to it,
yeah. You
know what I mean? Like, it's very uplifting. And when you listen to it, I don't know what they're singing about because I think they're singing in Danish.
Yeah, they're singing Norwegian, I think, like, whatever.
Norwegian, sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, it's a fun band to listen to.
Like, but only those two first records, honestly. I don't know about you, but like the other records after the first two records, kind of, I don't know, I didn't vibe with those records. But the first two records, excellent. Like, they sound amazing.
Yeah, I haven't really delved deep into their catalog.
Yeah. I think that's it for, like, random stuff we've been listening to. So let's talk a little bit about our highlights. So, Mansoor, why don't you tell me a little bit about, oh, geez, okay, that surprised me a little bit. A little bit about your pick for this week, the highlight of this week. Who's this nice gentleman we have here?
So this is my pick for this week. It's the song Power Nerd from Devin Townsend. Devin Townsend, apparently his face kind of scared our buddy here, Abdullah.
This gaze.
Devin Townsend is, I've been a fan of his work ever since the Strapping Young Lad days.
And he had a lot of side projects, Strapping Young Lad, and
so many. I like his solo work as well. I've been kind of on and off following when it comes to following his solo stuff, but I you know, everything I heard from him is pretty good. This new song is also fun to listen to. I mean, Devin Townsend is very eccentric, very unique. He has his own thing going. It's hard to, like, compare him or pin him down to, like, you know, a specific genre. He's a prog metal musician, but he has his own unique kind of sound. But, you know, he also produces his own work. So, and he's also known as a metal producer. He's worked with,
for others. Yeah, he produces others. For others as well.
Yeah, he worked with Lamb of God, Intronaut, and so many bands.
Oh, so, yes, he did. He did the last not the last record, the one before the last record, Direction of I forgot the name of the record, but yeah, he did that record.
He did that record. His production style is very
the Direction awesome. Of Last Things. That's the one that he did. Yeah. It's really cool.
So his music, it always sounds very loud, very, like, the guitars his production style is very layered. You hear a lot, he mixes a lot of sounds, samples, and, like, atmospheric and ambient sounds mixed with, like, heavy guitars. So if you're into music production and metal production specifically, check out Devin's work. You'll be very impressed, I think. But this song, you know, Devin is also known for his, like, for being a very versatile, and this song is showing more of his goofy side. If you can watch the music video and you'll see that, it's quite entertaining. So that's my pick for the week. Check it out.
Yeah, I think he's always goofy. Like, yeah. I mean, that's one of the, and listen, I don't mind humor, right? Like, it's not, I don't have a problem with it, but I feel like his album being called Power Nerd is appropriate because I feel like his music like really appeals to super music nerds, and yeah, they hear something or they see something in it that they kind of relate to. But for me, like, you know, I go and look at his record. I see that it's called Zeltoid the Omniscient.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm not interested. I'm not interested in listening to that, you know, and it's like weird, goofy sounding tracks with like this alien talking and I don't know what. And
yeah, that's one of his comedy albums. He does have pretty dark and intense like albums because I think he has like, he was diagnosed with bipolar and things like that. So yeah, he has pretty intense records that are just heavy emotionally. But he does showcase a lot of his kind of quirky, funny side as well. So, interesting body of work. Yeah,
very interesting. Strapping Young Lad definitely is an interesting project as well. It's one of those industrial sounding kind of. Like they remind me of Death. They remind me of like whatever. Like they just during that era. Like it's not bad. It's definitely worth checking out. But him as Devin Townsend himself as an artist, solo artist, like. I don't know. I just couldn't get into any of his stuff for some reason. Fair. But yeah, it's definitely cool. But it's an interesting track. Definitely worth checking out for sure. And definitely checking out his kind of portfolio and body of work. Moving like right along to something. it's just this band has a disgusting name, but I really like them. I really I enjoy listening to this band. Vomit Forth. So Vomit Forth, they're like, let's say they're a death metal band pretending to be hardcore or a hardcore band pretending to be death metal. That's the best way I can describe them, honestly, because they do like the death metal thing really well, but they incorporate even in a better way, like a lot of these hardcore elements, like the chuggy riffs, the kind of really intense and catchy and groovy parts that come along with like these death metal parts as well in a really, really cool way. And I'm glad that they kind of, you know, for this record, they've picked up the production because like the previous records, you know, you could hear their writing. It's great and everything, but the production honestly was kind of weighted down. It was too dark sounding for me, but this one is really good. And they released a couple of singles. You can see here, there's a bunch of singles from here, but, Negative Penance is their latest single they released and it's really good. But also definitely worth checking out Rotting Wool because that's also like a track that will show you like how they are willing to kind of push the envelope a little bit further as a death metal band. Like there's a bit of a singing part, like kind of chanting part in there. That's really cool. I love the tone of the guitars. I just love the tone of the guitars. I love the sound of the snare and this thing. A really cool band. I'm just looking forward to this release.
Yeah, personally, I didn't like it, to be honest. I thought it was all over the place. And like I like grindcore, but this is just too much. And I don't know. Nothing about it appealed to me, to be honest.
Yeah.
I couldn't vibe with it.
Yeah. It's like this new generation of metal that's influenced by death metal that's influenced by hardcore or something like that, you know. This is my pick for the week. I thought it was cool. I don't know about you, Mansoor, but I thought it was cool. In any case, do check it out. They have a couple of other records as well, and they did a couple of collaborations as well. There's another track that's really cool here. Called Crawl Space Messiah. This is not bad as well. It's worth checking out for sure. But in any case, how about we move on to the topic of the day? So, Mansoor, why don't you tell us, what are we talking about today?
So, our topic for today is recording live instruments, a dying art. That was, you know, we put forth that question to you guys and some of you answered. And the reason we are talking about this is because Slash from Guns N' Roses said that these days a lot of producers don't even know how to record you know, directly from a live instrument. A lot of them are relying on those kind of digital tools or those, you know, plugins where that kind of emulate, you know, a live studio and, you know, what an amp can do. And he was saying this is, you know, something that, you know, he's kind of that's kind of missing in today's music production world. And, you know, it just got us to think, you know, is this something that is this the way of, you know, the future? And, you know, it's you're our resident producer slash audio engineer here, Muzaj. What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I mean, I know for me personally, I don't necessarily. I mean, it is kind of a dying art, right? Kind of. I will say that there's a lot of new modern guitar heroes. Like, for example, you know, there's a name that always comes and pops up when you're talking about new modern guitar heroes, like Pliny, like Tosin Abasi from Animals as Leaders, like. What's the name of that guitarist from Polyphia? Anyways, there's this band called Polyphia as well. There's a guitarist, Tim Henson. Yeah, Tim Henson, that's his name. And these guys have never interacted with actual amps. In multiple interviews, well, actually, except for Tosin Abasi, but like Pliny and Tim Henson to more of an extent, like in a lot of interviews when they're talking, they're just like, yeah, you know, because they have their own signature plugins that emulate, you know, certain sounds of amps and things like that. And when they're asking them, they're like, yeah, you know, we've never used amps before in our lives. We've always just had an audio interface. We plug directly into it and we downloaded some kind of plugin or a simulator, like an amp emulator or an amp simulator that just will give us the sound that we like. And we never really cared about having like a stack or an amp head or like a cab or anything like that. You know, no, we just wanted to get a good sound and digitally as an amp sim, and it doesn't matter. However, a lot of the records that we like and listen to are still recorded in a more traditional way. Like, I don't know about what he's talking about, but, you know, every record that we talk about here on our show as well and that we listen to, by and large, has been recorded in a more in a traditional way with amps and, you know, being mic'd up. But it is something that is kind of changing a little bit here and there. And you see it a lot more in drums. So mm-hmm. A lot of times, you know, yes, a band will record live drums, but then they'll end up like Methanon doing a lot of sample replacement, right? They'll change the sound of the snare. They'll get again like a plugin, a sound library, or whatever it is of different drum sounds, different snare sounds, and things like that, and either outright replace like complete parts of the drums, including the cymbals and everything, or just, you know, enhance it and complement it. Bill Murray, the band that, I don't know, like in one of the episodes we talked about them, they apparently that album was recorded completely with VST drums. Like none of the drums on that album are real. Which, if you hear that album, you'll be like, yeah, I believe it, of course. Yeah, it sounds digital. Yeah, but like it sounds pretty good, you know, like it could sound, it is overproduced and things like that, but not everybody's going to listen to it and be like, oh yeah, these drums sound fake. No, it's done in a way that it sounds real enough, you know, and it sounds good. So personally, I don't see much of an issue with it as long as the product at the end of the day is something that sounds good. If you use real amps, if you don't use real amps, if you use drums, real drums, or if you don't use real drums, as long as the product at the end of the day is something that the artist is happy with, that the listener can listen to and enjoy as well.
I mean, I'm not completely against it as well. I mean, if it, you know, a lot of them can master it to the T and like make it sound exactly like a live drum set or whatever live instrument. But I do think there's it's kind of going to limit artist to that one thing, you know what I mean? Even though it's meant to be like give a lot of you know, room for creativity in terms of what an artist can do with those programs. But like, I'm just thinking of, like, for example, because I read in the Led Zeppelin book that Jimmy Page, when he recorded the song "When the Levee Breaks" from, you know, from the fourth album, you know, those that drum intro is pretty iconic now. It sounds very loud and spacey and things like that. What he did was he recorded it in like a historical building, in like the kind of in the lobby of a historical building, and that's why you get that kind of huge sound, drum sound effect. So it's just playing around with those kind of ideas. I don't know if artists will be able to do that, or I mean, they can do that, but it's just having the that kind of creativity to think outside the box a bit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And
yeah, you know, I mean, having those tools give you, it gives you, because of that, these tools, like let's say, for example, for someone like me who will never be able to have a, you know, a decent, like, you know, be able to record drums or find a studio that has like an amazing room sound, I can just download a plugin that will emulate that sound. Like, it will give me like the world-class studios in the world, like God City Instruments, Abbey Roads, I don't know what.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
And I'll just be able, you know, to Sound City, whatever, you know, like I'll just be able to get that live room sound from using a plugin. And I'll put it on top of my guitars, I'll put it on top of my drums or whatever, and I'll instantly be able to get that sound.
Yeah, I think there's an aspect of like cutting costs associated with it, you know what I mean?
Oh, for sure.
Instead of like manually getting up and moving around mics and doing all of that, just to cut, you know, to cut a lot of production time and studio time and hence cost, you can just do it on your computer with a touch of a few buttons and things like that. So,
yeah,
and that's I feel like the what everybody doesn't want to talk about yet. Maybe that's the reality. But I think musicians, rock metal musicians, are very proud of their gear and they want to use their gear to the max. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, and there's something to be said as well about, like, you just said it. It's like cutting cost, and I think earlier you also said something related to accessibility, and having those plugins and having those tools also will enable someone who's like 14 years old, 15 years old, sitting at home, who wants to record and release a song, for example, to be able to get a great sounding track from using these, you know, plugins and using these, you know, amp sims and drum sims and whatever. Because a 14-year-old kid is not going to be able to afford like all the best amps and equipment and all of that stuff. And they'll barely be able to afford like a guitar and a couple of pedals, for example. But then, like, you know, having plugins where that you can download a plugin for $50 or $60, and you get like a selection of different amps and cabs and microphones and I don't know what, and room sounds, like, that's amazing. Like, you'll be able to tune and fine tune the sound to get what you want. And then, like, oh, you know, I don't have a drummer, or you know, our drummer, that we cannot record our drummer because, you know, he doesn't have a space to the microphones and things like that. So you can just download a plugin and you program it in a way to make it sound realistic. And it opens the possibility and allows easy access and entering into the world of releasing music and becoming an artist and a musician, you know?
Yeah, but it's interesting to know, to be fair to Slash, he wasn't like saying that he's completely against it, because he said somewhere in the article that he likes to use those programs as well when he's touring, especially. Obviously, he's not going to stop by studios, so he just does it on everything on his laptop that he's carrying or whatever.
He mentions Amplitude 5 here. That's one of the,
So all of those tools are also very useful in that sense. So, but I mean, we asked you guys and you guys were kind enough to contribute as well to this question. So let's read some of the responses, right?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay.
We need to find a way to maybe highlight some of the best responses. Maybe we'll think about this, but there's probably a potential way of highlighting your responses and putting them on our Instagram account. So so yeah, if you have a great thought, we will definitely highlight you guys and show off your answers or feedback or responses.
Definitely. So we have I'm Ala Bond saying it's a bad thing.
Ala is a great artist. Go follow him. We're gonna tag everybody in the Instagram post, so like, yeah, you can see who they are. Definitely worth following him. He's a great artist.
Yeah, and Trip Loon here says it's bad for live music, I guess, but it doesn't matter for streaming and dance floors. So
yeah, I guess what he's saying there, electronic music, it doesn't matter for electronic music, which is, I mean, it goes without saying, right? Because electronic music, there's no live element in it whatsoever.
Yeah, that was a good response. I thought that was very on point. Here, Sally in the Clouds' response is, it's not dead and it should never die. Only lazy and untalented people would think it is progress.
Yeah, she's going for the kill there, Sally. Sally's really, I get what she's trying to say, definitely. I mean, if you're doing it to cut corners, and if you're doing it to make it easy for you, or it's because you don't want to, and let's say, for example, the example that I mentioned about drumming, for example, and you know, programming drums and using fake drums in your songs. If you're not willing to put in the time to practice how to play the drums and like play the actual stuff that you're programming and putting in, then yeah, it is definitely lazy and things like that. But I'll go back to the point as well of the artist that can't really afford to pay that much money for all these amps, or you know, they don't have the space to record drums, or they don't have the ability to record guitars loudly in their home or in a studio. So like having those kind of access to those things, you know, it's also, you know, she, like, her point as well could be something that applied to something we didn't talk about, which is autotune. So yeah. Autotune, for example, is something that it's interesting. Actually, I was watching a documentary about this yesterday on Apple Music. But it was an interesting documentary that showcased how autotune, yes, is something that can be used to, you know, definitely fix your vocals, right? Fix the vocals, and that's lazy. But it's also can be used as a tool. And there's, you know, like the example of T-Pain, for example, who just uses it like puts the setting to the max, and it makes like this weird instrument out of his vocals. So it's not always a bad thing to use something like that. But like, if you're using it to cut corners, yes, for sure. I agree with Sally. But if you're using it as a creative tool, then why not? And just as a last point, like, everybody should go check out T-Pain's live. Like, he has this live performance that he did on YouTube. Dude, I never thought that T-Pain had such an amazing voice. I am serious. He did a cover of War Pigs, Black Sabbath. Mm-hmm. It is amazing. He's an incredible, incredible vocalist. I cannot believe all this time it was hidden behind that autotune shtick. Anyways, yeah, go ahead.
I'll check it out. We got also a few more other responses from our friend Mustafa. He says, I'll keep it short. No, we're not done with that. And I believe him as well. There's lots of example. Our good friends More Than Indie said no. Have a one word response saying it's sad with a sad smiley.
Yeah, go follow More Than Indie. She has a podcast. She has an account that talks about indie artists in the Middle East and in the local scenes. And yeah, and I would see why she would be sad about it, because a lot of the music that she listens to or that she's into is very instrument based, right?
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, some artists use those technologies, I guess, in a smart way. I think Trent Reznor does. You know, as one of those artists who uses like technology in a very intelligent way when it comes to music production. So I'm not, again, I don't think it's black and white. I think there is kind of a gray area there. Our friend Ellie Rocks gave us a very interesting and lengthy response. Sorry, Ellie, I won't read the entire thing, but she makes an excellent point about how, you know, technology is always, you know, comes with the purpose of advancing human life and everything around us. Then, you know, she gave a few examples, of course, with, you know, the trains, automobiles, and all of those things. And, but yeah, when she talks about it in the sense of when it comes to music, she says, instrument-based music gives off an energy, a feeling, a specific vibe communicated by the way a musician plays and interacts with their instrument. Hence, I love to perform live and attend live shows. If I create electronic beats from a computer / software to showcase music, I have skipped an important interaction with the instrument and therefore a feeling that others could relate to, engage with, and support and experience. We need the human, I think, element to instrument relationship element. The world is too cold for this to disappear.
Shots fired at EDM EDM artists there. But dude, I 100% agree with her. I don't know about you, Mansoor, but like, obviously you've, and even if you love a band, right, even if you love an instrument, a band that plays like live instruments and music, live music, right, and when we say live music, we mean like, yeah, instrument based like music, and you hear those records, there's a completely different feel when you go see them live. Something about seeing a band playing live just hits the right spot. And, you know, it doesn't, like, why does it, I don't know why. Like, I don't know what it is about, like, the human condition that just makes you, like, seeing, like, a bunch of group of people get on stage and play the songs that you already know, that you've heard on records before, probably thousands of times. But then when you see them play it live, it hits different. It's different. It feels different. It has a different energy. It has a different, like Ellie said, like, it has a different vibe. It has a different energy. It gives you a different feeling. You feel a different way, you know? I don't know. It just is. And I'm not going to speak for people who enjoy electronic music or EDM. I'm sure they get the same feeling. I'm sure, like, when they go to their shows or whatever it is, where, you know, like, when they go watch their DJ, like, turn knobs or whatever it is that they do, when they're performing, I'm sure it's also like the speakers and the sound and the loudness of it, like, hits differently as well, and the people around you and things like that. But it's different, man. I don't think they get the same feeling that we get from the music that we listen to. And it doesn't have to be metal, you know, like, it could be whatever, rock, it could be pop, it could be, but like, as long as it's like, you know, instrument based and there's something there, it's not just a track being played, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you know, musicians master their instruments for a reason, you know, to be able to play those instruments live and in a way to showcase their talents and things like that. And it's an odd thing when you learn to play an instrument and then not end up playing your instrument live, you know, like you're supposed to. And maybe that's why there's still a lot of respect and admiration for, you know, more like classical music and opera and all that stuff, because, you know, there's a lot of respect shown to the live artist and, you know, the live musician when they play their instrument. But yeah, I agree with you. It's a very special, like, kind of experience to witness, you know, your favorite musician playing their best solo or hitting like specific notes live on stage, and, you know, all of that, and just the way the crowd vibes with it. And yeah, you can't replace that. You just can't.
Yeah. It's, I don't know why, it's just different. They could play it, you know, and because it's never going to sound the same. It's never going to sound exactly the way it is on a record. It could sound better, it could sound worse, or whatever it is, but like, it will just hit different. It will always be something that you will enjoy, especially if you love this band or enjoy them.
Yeah, and actually, prior to the speaking of technology, like prior to the release of recorded technology, people used to, in order for them to enjoy music, they had to go to their local music venue to watch their favorite artist perform. Then when recordings came out, like the when vinyl, I think that was the first type of record recording item that came out, people then associated music with what was recorded, whereas prior to that it was about what the musician played on stage.
Absolutely.
So yeah, then that became our main reference, that recording of that album. So yeah, I mean, now it's kind of becoming more mechanical, more automated, for better or worse.
In-ear monitors, backtracks, in-ear monitors with a click on it that just keeping you on time so that you don't miss a beat. So it ends up sounding exactly like the record, and like there's no feel in it or something like that. And then there's the backtracks, that's being played, and a lot of the whatever, for better or worse, like you said, for better or worse, it's there, but at least you're still getting that live element and live feel of watching musicians play live their instruments, at least on stage.
Yeah,
all right,
absolutely. So I guess that's it for this episode. Thanks to all who contributed, and thank you guys for listening.
Yeah, I think we really like this interaction. We really appreciate your voice and your feedback. So yeah, please keep them coming, and don't forget to subscribe to us on the different channels that we have. So YouTube, Apple Music. Recently, we just added our podcast on Rami, I think, right, Masoor? And
yeah, Rami and Deezer.
And Deezer, so, Spotify. So yeah, just don't forget to subscribe to us on those different channels. And stay against the shuffle. And we'll see you guys next week.
Yep. Take care.
Goodbye.